this is Katerin Campano, and this is a Risky Business News sponsor interview with Jerry Johansson, Principal Readiness Engineer at Red Canary. Welcome, Jerry.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Jerry, we're here to talk about incident response in this episode, and I'm going to be completely candid with you. If you would have asked me 2-3 years ago where incident response starts, I would have replied immediately the moment the company gets compromised, which brings us to your job title of Readiness Engineer. Now, the more you think of it, the more it makes sense that, of course, you're going to have a preparation phase for your incident response plans. But let's hear it from an actual readiness engineer. What does this phase typically include?
Agreed. One of the misconceptions is that this is strictly, if I have an incident response plan, I have some associated playbooks. You know, they sit on a shelf or they sit on a SharePoint site. We're good. You know, we take a look at it once a year and we're prepared. We have a full understanding of how we can actually respond to an incident. Much more preparedness is training and drilling what you have here. So if we think about something ubiquitous as the fire department, generally every community has some sort of capability to deal with fire. It's a high impact event. The fire department doesn't just keep the trucks clean and sit in the garage waiting for the alarm to go off. A lot of the times, the time that they're not actually engaged in firefighting is drilling, whether that's individual skilling, such as, you know, how they handle their equipment, how they work with specific tools, all the way up to coordination. You know, you've got several different teams all doing an aspect of firefighting, and they all have to work together. They all have to communicate. They all have to make sure they're coordinating their actions, make sure they're not, you know, working against each other and with each other. If we take that modality, we take that kind of way of looking at incident response, we have the same challenges. When you're talking full-on enterprise-wide ransomware situation, you have teams that are doing containment. You have teams that are potentially restoring critical systems. You also have an analysis team that's trying to pull evidence. All of these have to work in concert with each other. And if you've never practiced that, if you've never even thought about how that all works, look at your communication strategies. What ends up happening is things get a lot more muddied. They get a lot more complicated, and you have teams that are either working against each other or not working in concert. So overall, what preparedness, readiness is ensuring that those processes that you've crafted, those plans, playbooks, and workflows that you've spent a lot of time in, to make sure they're actually usable and that you can execute them during an incident.
From what you're telling me, incident response preparedness takes way more than the actual incident response execution. It's definitely more than attending a training session and putting our playbook on a shelf somewhere. Are companies that come to you kind of shocked of the effort they have to put into preparing? Are companies coming to you just for an easy way, like some sort of cheat sheet for the bad times, and then go, oh, wow, this is an ongoing effort that's going to take place every week, every month, every year from now on?
I would say a lot of organizations are not necessarily shocked. I think there's been a change in a good number of, say, business verticals and even across organizational size, that they recognize that this is something they have to do. When they're coming to us, oftentimes it's because of a lot of the expertise that we have in-house on various teams here. They recognize that this is something that they need to pay attention to. I wouldn't say shocked, but I think they do understand when we start running through some of these exercises, when we start poking and prodding their processes, is where they have failures, where they haven't considered something. For example, you may be talking about offline backups, and you realize the offline backups are stored in an individual safe where one individual has the combination to it. You know, maybe it's the network engineer or somebody at that level. And you can access that individual, you know, Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. But if it's Sunday morning at 2 a.m., do you even know who to go to? So it's those kind of things that they really haven't flushed out of their processes that really do catch them off guard. In terms of timing, there is an initial hesitation sometimes with the amount of time necessary. But when you think about, you know, how we structure and how readiness can be structured, and how that kind of drilling and training can be structured, we're talking maybe 20 minutes out of a week for individuals, and sometimes maybe just 20 to 30 minutes once a month for teams. And when you break it down like that, I think it's a lot more palatable than saying we're going to need 5, 6, 7 or a full day activity with everybody from your network team, your desktop team, your security team, and then all of the communications, legal, executive committee. When we pull all those two, that's when they tend to really kind of go, oh, we can't support that. So a lot of what we've been talking about is how to structure this where we're maximizing the training value with an eye on understanding that, you know, not every security operations team can take 2 or 3 days to run through drills once a month. Then let's break these out into tasks that we can look at 20 to 30 minutes a month, 20, 30 minutes a week. And over time, you're building in that skill set, you're building in that familiarization and the ability to execute without too much discussion or too much the time it takes to go from detection to response.
So the time they need to allocate to incident response preparedness is the most common complaint you get, or do you hear anything else?
I think that's it's a complaint that we can easily say, you look at the math and go, hey, we can break this out where it is maximizing the amount of time. One of the other, I wouldn't say complaint, but one of the other observations is it's very technical. There's a lot of moving pieces when we're talking just even from the response standpoint. As I said earlier, all of this coordination, all of this tooling, all of these processes. So a lot of the time organizations, when we start poking and prodding to say, okay, you need some work on crisis communications, you need some work on something as simple as evidence collection or evidence or threat hunting at scale, this is where organizations tend to realize very quickly that, as you rightfully said at the very beginning, oh, we have plans, we have playbooks, we have an IR plan up on the shelf that we should be sufficient. This is where they oftentimes will have that, I would say, more of a realization of how complex this can get, especially when we're talking something as serious an impact as an enterprise ransomware incident or a data theft.
And the financial side, do companies complain about costs?
That's, yeah.
I was expecting that to be the number one, to be honest.
Yeah.
So I was also wondering, do you and the other Red Canary readiness engineers ever participate in the actual incident response? Or do you come later, look at the reports and see what new technique, what new things you can incorporate in your materials going forward?
So a lot of what we do here is taking from our intelligence side as well. The readiness really aims to pull from the intel side of Red Canary. We have very healthy, competent, well-regarded intelligence side to craft up these scenarios. In terms of working with customers that are actually experiencing a breach, it's kind of outside of the readiness team. We do have a number of different personnel within the Red Canary organization that handles that. Oftentimes, where we're pulling our, say, inspiration for, say, drills or full-on exercises is coming directly from our intelligence profiles. Our intel folks work regularly with them. For example, I met last week. We were talking about how we're seeing, you know, malicious link file associated with Redline, and a lot of that to really make it very realistic for the user, for those teams that are going through there. So we take a lot of our intel, what we're seeing from real world scenarios, and boiling it down into specific tactics and techniques. We also leverage sometimes even just stories in the news that we can say, this is something we need to think about. One of the other kind of ancillaries to that is the way we structure these exercises and the way we structure readiness in particular is being very responsive to immediate needs. So for example, if you look at high profile vulnerability or high profile threat actor, the way we structure how we train and how we can work with our customers is taking something like that, turning around in 48 hours and having something that they can actually exercise as part of their preparation for potentially, you know, a new threat actor comes out that's trying a novel TTP set. And this way we can be much more responsive This goes back to the time discussion. We can exercise that in 72 hours and work with some realistic scenario versus waiting 6 months for that tabletop exercise to go through it. And in that time, the TTPs may have changed, or the threat actor may have moved on, or you may have actually experienced some real world activity in that intervening time.
Having your IR plan updated in real time is not something I would have thought it would have been possible. Because you often think of IR playbooks as something that come in every month, and then the IT team takes another month to read them and so on and so on. I was wondering if the recent widespread adoption of cloud infrastructure is making IR easier or harder for you.
I would say it's more complex. When we're looking at cloud infrastructure, it is something that organizations really do have to understand. What we do have in terms of cloud is really a lot more telemetry and data being pulled in. So for example, you look at all of the log sourcing that Azure has. Everything from the infrastructure to how you access the infrastructure to even just endpoint or applications that you're hosting in Azure, there's a lot of data there. So really what Incident Responses has really had to do in the last couple of years is understand what telemetry is available and actually how to analyze that telemetry. So it does make it, if you want to say harder, I would say a little bit more complex. It adds another layer or two of data that we would have to really go through. One of the things, though, that cloud has actually, wouldn't say simplified, but it allows organizations to conduct a lot of activities at scale. There's a lot of tools that run cloud natively or can be deployed in the cloud, such as remote evidence collection, telemetry aggregation through something like Elastic in the cloud or Splunk in the cloud that can be deployed or utilized. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. Is it does add a degree of complexity to what we need to do. We have to understand log sources. We have to understand what those log sources are telling us and extrapolate, you know, threat actor behavior through there. But it also gives us the ability to say, deploy tools and deploy solutions near real time to an incident or very quickly in regards to an incident. And it gives us that expandability and ability to do something that we don't have to necessarily deploy, take a enterprise ransomware. We don't necessarily need to deploy tools in the enterprise to get them to work. We can deploy tools through any number of cloud platforms and utilize that infrastructure as part of our response. So again, going back to very beginning of our discussion, those are the things that as organizations adopt more of these infrastructures, whether it's AWS or Azure, think about also that this is also a solution or a potential advantage if there is an issue.
You previously mentioned Red Canary's Intel capabilities. This grants you access and a view of the threat actor landscape and trends. It's quite unique. Is there something you see there that's giving you headaches from a preparedness point of view? Is there a particular type of incident or threat actor that may be challenging to prepare for?
I will say that at a macro level, the way that threat actors are adaptable is the headache. You know, for example, when Microsoft limited the use of macros, that was a primary threat vector, right? It was macro-enabled Excel or Word document, PowerShell, you know, that combination of tooling. And very quickly, they adapted new methods, whether it's, you know, the mark of the web bypass, you know, using ISO files, link files, HTML files to get that initial foothold. So, you know, it becomes a game of whack-a-mole, for lack of a better term, is that every time we hit that mole, that threat actor technique, another one pops up. That is what every organization, it's not just Red Canary, is facing in terms of dealing with threat actors. The intel that we do see is a commonality across a lot of different threats out there. And we have our top 10 techniques that are leveraged, our top 10 tools. You know, Qbot is in the news. That was a big one. We see a lot of the same, very similar types of TTPs across a lot of different threat actors. So what it does tell us is there is a delta or a fat middle of TTPs that we do see a lot of threat actors leverage. So it is something that when you have that deep insight and we coordinate with, you know, other external sources, we're seeing that commonality.
When you have a new client, do you ever recommend tools over procedures? Or is there situations where you put emphasis on implementing procedures and then recommend various tools? Or are these a common package when doing incident response?
So one of the advantages we have here, you know, on the readiness team is being rather tool agnostic, in that we don't necessarily are married to a specific tool. With a customer that's coming to us, they have an MDR solution. So that generally, that's a really good starting point for us to have. What we do, though, is focus mainly on looking at processes, and where you will see us recommend tooling is if there is a significant hole in that process. If we need something, for example, oftentimes it's not necessarily we need to make a recommendation on a specific tool. What we need to do is make recommendations on optimizing what they already have. A lot of times organizations are coming to us with a very, very good technology stack. So we may sit and have a discussion during an exercise about command and control traffic. Are you able to have visibility into north-south network traffic, traffic that's coming in or ingressing or egressing your firewall? And often organizations will say something to the effect of, well, you know, we have an next-gen firewall, but we're really not making use of deep packet inspection or doing some analytics around network connections. So that's really more the looking at the process, saying, okay, well, you have this tool, let's optimize it. Let's put some energy and resources into making that tool work for you. The same thing with an EDR solution, as they may say, well, we've never really worked with collecting evidence or collecting artifacts via the EDR tool. Well, there's your process. There's a process that you need to develop, and you need to build some motor muscle memory into that process to actually execute on that. So very rarely do I have to recommend a new solution. Oftentimes it's a lot about optimizing what they have and tying a process around it so that they can execute it during the stress of an incident. There are rare circumstances where we will say, you know, there are options. There are open source solutions in particular for organizations that may be dollar conscious and not have the budget for that, that will fill those gaps. But for the most part, if you have good processes and you can optimize your technology, you're going to be much better prepared.
Jerry, I know you previously worked in law enforcement before joining Red Canary. Do you think there's a particular type of personality or type of skills that incident response and especially preparedness engineers need to possess, or are usually a good starting point?
A good starting point is if you're gonna take on the role of, say, an incident lead or readiness specialist or engineer, a lot of it is understanding not just the technical aspects, but incident management. In the United States, the Federal Emergency Management Agency has specific training, it's ICS 100, on incident command. So something like that. It's the ability to, for lack of a better term, keep calm when the entire house is burning down around you. That is the major, say, personality or skill set that you need to bring to this. You are going to be getting requests, pressure from all different organizations, all different personalities, and the ability to move through that is very helpful. My law enforcement career in particular prepared me for that because it is a crisis-driven environment in a lot of ways. And I've had to deal with everything from simple chemical spill on the highway to highly charged situations, and the ability to stay calm is one of them. If you're, say, interested in learning about this, is, you know, something as simple as Googling incident management techniques, anything from, you know, as I said, the ICS 100 to a lot of different other trainings out there that'll help you understand the interplay, how you're supposed to communicate, how you're able to divide out tasks and assign tasks. It's crisis project management. The major kind of stumbling block that a lot of individuals or that want to do this or work in kind of that readiness incident command role have is they'll go through this training and then not drill it, because this is something that you can't really do under stress if you haven't trained it and you've drilled it and you've practiced those skills over the course of a year, 2 years before an actual incident.
So it's more communication skills than technical skills.
Communication is the big one.
I think that's a great way to end it. Jerry, thank you very much for your time today.
All right. Thank you very much.